So we're working through a series at the moment. It's really great to have some visitors with us, and we always love having visitors here. So welcome everyone. If you're visiting with us, we're doing a series at the moment. Our church here in Narendra, as well as, I forgot where I was there for a minute. Our church here in Narendra, and also a church at Leeton, up at Condobolin and Cooleman. We're all working simultaneously on a series called Transformed, a Rick Warren series, and it's been really great so far. I've been having some tremendous feedback. If you are part of a group and haven't yet got a book, we had to order some extra in, which was a good problem. There's some of these books on the back table up there, so just make sure you grab one of those afterwards. If you've been part of a group or want to be part of a group and are short of a book, then grab some books or a book there to let you know that. And then if you're not in a group yet, just let me really encourage you to be part of a small group and to do the series with us. Look, it's something that we're doing as a family and even as a wider family, because the other churches are part of it. And, you know, it's really a, well, so far anyway, the feedback has been excellent, and I know I've really got a lot out of it, even though I've done it before. I'm in three groups over the fortnight. So how it works is we're doing two Sundays covering one theme, and then during that fortnight, most of our Connect groups meet. And just very quickly, there's a Connect group on a Tuesday morning here at the church. It's actually each week, but every fortnight it covers the Transform theme. Then there's a Tuesday evening at our place on both Tuesdays of the fortnight. This coming Tuesday is for men. So any of the guys, if you want to jump on board, it's not too late. We're just up to part two, and you'd be welcome to jump in on that. And then the opposite Tuesday, so that'd be like Tuesday week, and then each fortnight we've got a mixed group, which anyone is welcome to come along and be part of. And it's a great group of people that have been meeting for a while, doing other things and are doing this theme as well. On Thursday, midday at Carmen's place, Ash Beer runs a group, and so that's not this Thursday, is it, Ash? So Thursday week, and then each fortnight after that, but again, talk to Ash or Carmen. There's a group at Gan Main with Graham and Benita, and that's on a Thursday evening as well, and that will be on this coming Thursday. There's a young adults group at Ash and Nat's place. Again, check with them. Jeremy runs that, but Ash and Nat host it. So touch base with them and find out which week it's on. And then Thursday morning in the church hall, this is for the early birds, 7:30 till 9. So if that sort of suits you, is a good time on Thursday morning, 7:30 to 9, and that will be this Thursday and each fortnight. The good one about that one is Dave Pohl, who cooks breakfast. So I've been to one of them, and we've had bacon and eggs and pretty nice coffee, Makona, I think it was called. It's a fairly significant brand that's out at the moment. And so we had a nice brekkie together and a really good study group. So if you if that's a time that suits you, then come along to that one as well. And then the youth have been doing a Wednesday night at Mari's place. So talk to Zach and Catherine about that. Glenn and Alison doing it as a family, and that's a good idea as well. Great to just even do it as a family or as a smaller group. So if you're not on board with it, I just encourage you to jump on board with it. A couple of reasons. One is because it's something we're doing as a family, so you know it's good to be involved in it together if you can tap in there somewhere. And the other thing is, and I know I repeat myself in some things are deliberate and some things are to do with old age, but this one is deliberate, all right? And it's about how over the 40 years, you know, in sort of ministry life and involved in church life, I've made this observation. So it's what I've seen, and whether you agree or not, it's what I've seen. It's a generalization, but people who primarily do these three things, people who give a priority to Sunday morning, and that's not like some great rule, tick the box, religious practice, but it's like when you just love to be together on a Sunday morning and just hear what's going on and be part of the church family sort of meal or gathering together. So when people are committed to a Sunday morning, when they're in part of a Connect group, you know, where you're learning and growing together with a smaller group of people, you get to know each other a bit better, you can share a bit more intimately, you can pray for each other, perhaps about things that aren't so easy to share broadly. So when they're involved in a Connect group, and then when they find an area to serve, either in the church or through the church in the community, and you're part of a group serving together, those three things, you know, I find, it's just my observation over 40 years, is that those people, they grow spiritually. And they have a resilience, you know, when things get a bit challenging like they do in life, well, you're just able to keep going and you're able to grow through those periods. And also, there's a sense of humility or dependence upon God. You know, kindness and gratitude towards others seem to be able to be maintained in our life. And who knows, we get grumpy sometimes. Anyone know that? It's funny because I was just talking to someone, you know, we were just sharing honestly through the week, and they said, I can just feel myself, you know, as a leader getting a, and it wasn't from Narendra, but someone I talked to, just feel myself, you know, getting a bit harsher and a bit like less tolerant, you know, what's some clues there? And we just talked about, you know, sometimes it's just draw aside and just, you know, do some reading from the scriptures. And even if it's not exactly speaking to the theme of what's going on in your life, somehow it brings you onto the frequency, you know, of God, doesn't it? Just opening up the word and just spending time and just listen. And I don't know, somehow through that, come to a place of gratitude and just start to appreciate who God is and what he's done for you. It softens your heart. Is that right? And it just does something. And so, you know, life can sometimes, you know, we harden our hearts because we want to protect ourselves from some of the challenges that come in life. But, you know, we want to keep a soft heart. We want to keep growing. We want to be resilient so we can keep going through challenging times. You know, and I just have observed, and I can testify from my own journey, that I was glad that as a young Christian I was challenged about, you know, being involved in Sunday and just loving Sunday morning and gathering together, being involved in a small group and then looking for a way to serve, an area to serve. And when you give out, something happens inside of you, doesn't it? Anyway, that's not the sermon, but I'll try to take those couple of minutes off my sermon time this morning. Is that all right? But I just encourage you that way. And I know I say that a bit, but it's just because I've experienced it. And why not share that, because it's such a helpful thought in our life and our journey. All righty. Has anyone else found that that's true? Anyone else found that that works for them in their journey? All right. So some nods and some hands. So that's good. I've got friends here. Alrighty, so we're going to talk about physical health. This is part two. Jeremy again introduced us to this second part last week. He talked primarily about some of the stresses that come up in life. I'll talk a little bit more about the physical side, but you know, it's really difficult to separate, isn't it? Because we know, even from Scripture, we know that we're made up of spirit, soul and body. And it's not like, well, there's your spirit and there's your soul and there's your body, although we can define them reasonably well. They work so much together, don't they? And they're all affected by what happens in different parts of our being. And so we had a great scripture which I think came into our Connect group or in one of our readings, maybe devotional readings. Who's been enjoying the devotional readings? You know, in the Transform series, so 7 readings each fortnight, so it's pretty easy to fit that in with maybe other readings that you're doing, or to get going, you know, if you want to get started or, you know, rekindle your devotional life, then it's really a great thing. So this verse came up somewhere, and it's been one of my favourites over the years, but it's 3 John verse 2, only one chapter, and it says, Beloved, this is the older version, but it says, Beloved, I wish above all things that you may prosper and be in health, even as your soul prospers. And it goes on to say, you know, there's nothing that pleases me more than to hear, you know, the good news of what's happening, you know, in your life and your journey and the good things that are happening. That's a very much paraphrased version of the next verse. But it talks about, you know, just wishing, having a desire that we might prosper and be in health as our soul prospers. And really it's covering so many areas of our life, so many facets of our life are in there. And, you know, when one area, when our soul, when our will, our emotions, our thought life is prospering, is healthy, is positive, you know, is refreshed, then what happens is it flows into our physical life, doesn't it? We all know that. We know that when we have, you know, things that we're struggling with, maybe emotionally or otherwise, that it takes a toll physically, doesn't it? Is that right? And then we can go another level deeper and say that our spiritual life, it's, I love, and I often pray this as I'm praying for people, but I love the picture Jesus painted when he talked about the spring of living water, you know, rising up inside of us. And I often picture that in my own life, and when I'm praying for people for emotional or physical needs, what I find myself praying is that spring of living water will just rise up from inside. It's like the spiritual life inside of us. When we allow it to rise up, when we recognize it's there and appreciate and allow it to rise up inside of us, what it does, it kind of washes our thoughts, doesn't it? It refreshes our thoughts and it refreshes our, you know, our emotions and the different things that happen, anxieties and other things that we experience in our life. Both, you know, there's an anxiety that comes through circumstances, there's an anxiety that's like a, you know, a deeper thing that we have to face, and people face to different degrees. Just like depression, isn't there? Depression can be like a bad day because circumstances are a bit negative, but we know that for many, and for perhaps all of us at different times, it's much deeper than that. There's not even a rationale to it. It's something that is much more of a deeper thing that needs to be dealt with. And sometimes it gets so complicated, doesn't it? The blend of, you know, spiritual and emotional and physical. Is that right? And that's why even the medical profession, look, I admire the way that they study and research and get and accumulate knowledge. But you know, the medical profession struggles, don't they, in trying to understand often the things that happen in our most inner parts. Because, you know, it's so complex, and I forgive them for that. But, you know, ultimately I would say to them in a very gracious way, hey, why don't you look a bit deeper? Why don't you take a bit more of a look at the spiritual dimension of our life? Sometimes, you know, that's what's needed, isn't it? Because you can't understand it if you want to ignore the God factor. It's just so hard to understand how all of that works together. How are you going? Am I talking to the right people? Are we okay with that? It's true, isn't it? It's so complicated. Or is it just me? Maybe you all understand it all. But it's so complicated, life, sometimes. You know, where does it come from? Is that, you know, I feel this way physically, but it seems to be something deeper, and sometimes it affects us spiritually if it's there long enough and all that sort of thing. So anyway, you get the point. So it's talking about physical health, you know, I think it was great that Jeremy introduced it, and that was really drawing from some of Rick Warren's material, but and his way of talking about this theme. But it was really talking about the stresses that come in life and how that affects us in so many ways. So that was a good way to lead in last time. And so that's why the Bible tells us, and this is really the expression of heart of God's heart, even though John is writing it, beloved, that's you and me, isn't it? Beloved, I wish above all things that you prosper and be in health, even as your soul prospers. When we prosper inwardly, we experience outward health. We know from John 4, and we so often refer to this story, it's such a wonderful story of the Samaritan woman at the well. And I'm not going to read it and talk too much about it, but just to refer to it in the context of how I'm introducing this study today, that the Samaritan woman was at the well, and Jesus said, you know, just in one translation says, well, I just had to go via Samaria. You know, I was on a journey, I just had to go via Samaria. Well, we know that that just means he kind of just knew that that's where the Father was leading him, and he had to be there. There was some reason for going through there. And so then when he came to the well, you know, by chance he met this lady who was there, and, you know, against all cultural correctness, he spoke to both a woman and a Samaritan woman, and so he was having conversation. She was a bit, you know, unsure and whatever about why he would be talking to her for all those reasons. But as the conversation went on, he began to talk about thirst, didn't he? And he confused her, and probably confuses us as readers initially, because he's talking about, like, you know, you're going to draw water from the well. Well, there's a water I can give you that you won't thirst again. And he's kind of talking about physical, but then he's kind of talking about something deeper, isn't he? The inner need, the thirst that's an inner need. And so he's saying to her, you know, I can give you water that will help you, you know, that will quench your inner thirst. And she's a bit confused, but through the discussion, she begins to unfold some things that have happened in her life. We know that what happened was she had so many husbands, and the one that she had at the moment wasn't her husband. And so she was a lady that obviously had this thirst inside, and he wasn't judging her or criticizing her. He was just opening it up so that he could begin to say, there's a thirst inside of you, that, you know, there's an outward need, there's an outward thing that's happening in your life. You know, the relationships that you're entering into and all that sort of thing, nothing's working out, and everything's just getting, I'm sure for her it was a downward spiral. And he wasn't judging or condemning, but he's beginning to help her to understand that this outward symptom is from an inward problem. There's something inside. And but he didn't say, well, you've got an inward problem. He says, you know what, I want to give you water. I just want to satisfy that thirst. Now, I don't know about you, but when you think about an inward thirst, we all experience in all sorts of ways, don't we? Where we just want to be satisfied, we just want to be full. Do you know what I mean? And when something happens that actually quenches that thirst inside of us, and we can actually feel satisfied and fulfilled and restful, and whatever words, you know, you explains it best for you, isn't that a beautiful place to come to? Isn't it great to step through the turmoil inside, the thirst, the seeking for something, the something that's unsatisfied, the something that's unquenched, that's just getting thirstier and seeking? Isn't it great when, you know, and it's kind of not like it gets satisfied once and for all, but certainly when we encounter Jesus, it's the beginning, and then as we get to know him and understand what he wants to do in our life, I believe it doesn't have to be, look, way up and way down and way up and way down. It might be a little bit of a cycle, but it's a forward-moving cycle. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? And so isn't it beautiful to have that thirst quenched in our life? The need for all sorts of things because God has given us certain desires and certain things inside of us that are good things. But what the enemy does is he comes along and he tries to distort that to make it something that will master our life and get control of our life. So all sorts of things, you know, appetite for food and for water and even sexual desire and other things that God has created to be a beautiful thing, the enemy comes along and he wants to distort that and destroy that by the thirst inside of us, you know, in an unhealthy way, driving and steering our life. Still hope I'm making sense to you. So there's that, I guess what I'm trying to do in introduction is get us to see that it's okay that it's a bit complicated, and it's okay that sometimes it takes a little while to figure it out, and it's okay, it's important to understand that there are these dimensions to it. So we're not trying to satisfy something at a physical level that actually needs to be addressed at a spiritual or a emotional level. Is that right? See, if you go to the doctor and you've got a broken leg and it's causing you a lot of pain, and he gives you such a significant amount of painkillers that you don't feel the pain of your broken leg, so you just go on limping around for the next couple of months, not feeling too much pain, but your leg is still broken. Has he really helped you? Has the doctor really solved the problem? No. And I'm not criticizing doctors, because I think in that case they're going to put plaster on the leg and do an X-ray and do an MRI and I don't know all these things, but you know, you do all these things he's going to get to the bottom of it. He or she will get to the bottom of it and solve the problem. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? You need to address not just the symptoms, but look at the inner problem. So we can talk about physical health, but it's impossible to do that without understanding that there's other dimensions to it. 1 Thessalonians 5, I'll quickly give these references and you can scribble down and look them up later if you want to. But 1 Thessalonians 5, 23 and 24 says, depends which translation, says that may the God of peace make you holy. In other words, set you aside and wash you and cleanse you. May your whole spirit, soul and body be kept blameless. And then it goes on to say that, you know, God will do this. So if you allow him to, he will do it. It's not like you're trying to do that yourself. But really what it does is brings in the idea of spirit, soul and body. All right. So we know it's not just my idea or someone else's idea or a scientific idea. This is a biblical concept, isn't it? Of spirit, soul and body. So 1 Thessalonians 5, 23 and 24. And may your whole spirit, soul and body be kept blameless. And God will do this, is the passage. So it'd be good to look that up. Mark 12. 28 and 29. Jesus, again, was answering the question from a teacher of the religious law. So one of the religious guys, the teacher of the religious law, asked Jesus this. And it says, I think beforehand, depending on, again, on the translation, it says, religious guy saw that Jesus was answering the questions well. So I don't know whether he was trying to trick him or whether he thought, well, that'd be okay to pop a rather complex question in, but he threw this one in. What is the most important commandment? And many of you would know the answer to this. Jesus said, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. And again, if you think about that, it's every part, isn't it, of our being. With all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. And I believe that sort of encompasses, you know, spirit, soul and body. Every part of us is linked in this expression of, we could say, even worship, isn't it? In our expression of worship, we can actually engage every part of our being. Alrighty, so we're all convinced, I'm sure, and we all understand that there's this complex dimension to us. But let's talk a little bit about the physical then this morning, because that's our theme. And I want to pick up a verse, Ecclesiastes 10, verse 10. So most of this stuff, well, pretty well all this stuff I'm going to share now is not necessarily from Rick Warren's stuff, but I think ties in pretty well with our theme. So Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 10 is a little verse, but one with a fairly strong meaning or helpful meaning for us, or helpful information for us this morning. The Message Bible says, remember, the duller the axe, the harder the work. Use your head. The more brains, the less muscle. Now, I don't know whether you dad's ever told you. Has he? You know, if you use your brains, you won't have to use your muscles so much. Maybe it's just fresh in my mind because I worked for my dad for a year last year. So sometimes he would tell me that. If you use your brains, you won't have to use your muscles so much. So I did my very best to try and use my brains in those occasions. But this old idea of sharpen the axe, the Amplified brings it out pretty well. It says, if the axe is dull and he does not sharpen its edge, then he must exert more strength. But wisdom, in brackets, to sharpen the axe, helps him succeed, in brackets, with less effort. All right. So the whole thing of sharpen the axe, and really that's my theme this morning, is sharpen the axe. Because this really talks about, this term really talks about what we do to keep ourselves in physical health. Now, I saw a little video through the week, and Gene was due to be here today, but on the things I was going to talk about him in front of him, but it happens that he's not here today anyway, and so I'm not able to talk in front of him, so I'm going to talk without him, but I'm sure he won't mind, because he posted on Instagram a picture of himself, and he's doing some boxing. So you may not know Gene, but Gene's a young fellow here, and he's been doing some boxing lately. So as part of his training, and I was talking with his dad, had some coffee with his dad through the week, and we chatted about it, and he goes out the common with a blockbuster and with an axe, and he gets a great big log, and he starts belting it with the blockbuster. And so I saw a little video clip that Gene put up of himself belting this block, this big, great big log with a blockbuster. And I don't know, my mind went to that as sharpen the axe, right? So a blockbuster isn't real good for cutting wood. Who knows that? And so he's putting a few dents in it, and he's just going flat out. It's part of his building his strength for the boxing. So he's just going as hard as he can for as long as he can. Eventually just kind of drops the axe, drops the blockbuster exhausted. And he did have a go with the axe, and that looked like more fun because you actually were, you know, pretty sharp axe, and the bits of chips were flying off the log. But I thought, you know, even thought about getting the video clip and showing you, but, you know, it's pretty senseless just there with the blockbuster, unless what you're trying to do is build your strength, which he's doing. But it's pretty senseless trying to chop a log with a blockbuster, because it doesn't matter how hard you swing it, you're not going to really, you might put a dent, and eventually you might get a bit bigger dent, but you're not really going to cut the log. You're not going to do it. And you can say, I'm going to try harder, I'm going to keep going, and I'm going to keep going, you know. Well, probably a more realistic illustration is, you know, you're out in the forest or somewhere legal where you can collect wood, and you've got your chainsaw or you've got your axe, and you're cutting wood there frantically, and you want to get this done as quick as you can, and as you're cutting the chainsaw, you know, or the axe gets a little bit blunt. Well, I don't have time to stop. You know, I've got to keep going because I want to get home before dark. And so you don't stop and don't sharpen the axe. You just think, I'm just going to keep chopping because I've got to get this done. You know, and so you're just going harder and harder and harder, and it's getting slower and slower and slower. Who's got the picture? And so, you know, what it says here is, you know, it's not a good idea. And we kind of, maybe we laugh, maybe we think back to the times when we've done something similar in whatever way you want to apply it to your life. But I've just kept going because I've got to get this done. But you know that the effectiveness is becoming minimal, and the drain to your strength, you know, and whatever, the negative effect upon your body and eventually every part of your being is not a good one. And so what that guy would be better to do, you know, or you and I be better to do if we're out there and we're cutting the wood with the chainsaw or with the axe, would be to say, hang on a sec, this is going to be a good investment. If I just stop for however many minutes and I grab the file, And I start to file the axe so that, you know, I'm not chopping, but what I am doing is I'm filing that axe so that when I start chopping again, that axe is going to be, you know, really doing its job much better. And I think you'd find out, I haven't kind of done it with a stopwatch, but I think you'd find out that actually if you stop and you take 10 minutes to sharpen the axe and then you start chopping again, you're pretty quickly going to get your 10 minutes back. Now, anyone here who's experienced a chopping wood want to agree with me that that's probably what would happen? Yeah? Someone help me out so that it's not just my theories up here this morning. Anyone? Yeah, you think I'm right? Good on you. That's good. So you can go down with me, Ian, if this is not proven to be correct when we Google it later. All right. But, you know, you got the point, haven't you? And I think, you know, Ecclesiastes is such a book of wisdom, isn't it? And I think it's such a great example of what we need to do and how we can, you know, invest in our physical health. Because I don't know about you, but sometimes, you know, and I have to be careful what I say because my wife will be there soon, whether I practice what I preach this morning. And I just want to admit, sometimes I don't, and so I'm listening this morning as well. And I've been listening to myself as I've been preparing for today, all right? So my heart's as open as yours is hopefully this morning. Because we just think we've got to keep going, we've got to keep doing that, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. I hope I can get some credibility from the fact that, you know, totally illogically I took 12 months off, you know, recently, and so maybe that gives me a little bit of credibility to tell you, you know, that sometimes we have to just do, don't we, what we need to do, and it actually everything still works out all right, and in the end, it's better for you. So, all right, so I'll read the Amplified again. If the axe is dull and he does not sharpen its edge, then he must exert more strength. But wisdom to sharpen the axe helps him succeed with less effort. So I guess the next few points are, you know, what are some things we can do to sharpen the axe? And I'm going to be very brief on each of these, but I just want to get our thoughts on them. Other people can talk much better about some of these subjects than me, but I think I can introduce them and get you thinking about them. And the first one is exercise. And you know, the Bible gives us a really great scripture to think about exercise and the benefit of exercise, but how to keep it in perspective, all right? So 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 6 to 9. 1 Timothy 4, 6 to 9. I've got a few different verses from that I'm going to do from other translations, so I'm just looking to make sure where I'm going to get this one from. But I'm going to read this from the New Living Translation, I think, here. So, one of the ways we sharpen the axe is with exercise. And we don't all have to be, you know, every minute of every day thinking about it, but it's something that we shouldn't avoid and we should see the benefit of. So here it says to Timothy, Paul to Timothy, and he's talking to him about, here's some stuff that you would do well to teach the people that you're talking to. That's what he's saying. The people that you are entrusted with, the people that you have opportunity to speak to as a ministry and as a young leader, you know, these are some things that would be beneficial for you to teach. If you explain these things to the brothers and sisters, Timothy, you will be a worthy servant of Christ Jesus, one who is nourished by the message of faith, the good teaching you have followed. So that's interesting, isn't it, how it just even talks about being nourished by the message. By following good teaching, we become nourished. And I think that talks about every part of our being. Do not waste time arguing over godless ideas and old wives' tales. Instead, train yourself to be godly. So he's really talking about that. Train, like you would physical training. Train yourself to be godly. Then verse 8 says, physical training is good, but training for godliness is much better, promising benefits in this life and in the life to come. This is a trustworthy saying, and everyone should accept it. Now, you know, there's a couple of problems with expressing things that way. The older translation says something like this. It says, bodily exercise, I haven't got it written down, but I think it says something like this, bodily exercise profits little, but godliness, da-da-da. And it goes on and talks about that. Is it up there? Well, anyway, so that's verse 8. And so here it says physical training is good, which is probably a better way of saying it. You know, when we read the older translation, it says bodily exercise profits little, we can sometimes say, oh, well, that doesn't matter then. You know what I mean? We have a tendency, don't we, to say, well, this is better than that, so I'll go after this and ignore that. But that's at our own peril, because it's not really what it's saying. Does it say that bodily exercise profits? Yes or no? Yes, it does, doesn't it? So it's really just saying, here's the balance. Bodily exercise profits. So we should be taking a hold of that idea. We don't say, well, it profits little, so, you know. No, it's not saying that at all. Bodily exercise profits. To consider your body and to consider your fitness and to consider exercise actually is profitable for you. The newer translations, again, put it in a way that's less able to be, you know, misunderstood and dismissed. You know, I'll give you another example that will absolutely show what I'm saying. There's another time where Paul is teaching and he says, faith, hope and love. But the greatest of these is love. And what can happen is we can say, oh, well, it's all about love. Faith and hope aren't that important. Now, that'd be crazy, wouldn't it? Because faith and hope. So faith, hope and love, these three. But the greatest of these is love. Oh, rightio. Faith and hope don't matter, but love is going to be what we go after. No, no. It's not saying that. It's saying, you know what? Let's build a foundation of love, and then faith and hope, which are so vital and so important, will actually be able to come to their full fruition. Well, here it's saying, you know, hey, bodily exercise is profitable. It profits little, but be careful. Don't just kind of go all after that, because it's kind of temporal. But it will be able to help you contribute to that which is eternal, that which is longer lasting. It's not all kind of saying it like this, but it is saying it is there. And in the same way as you might have discipline to commit yourself to bodily exercise, then in the same way, commit yourself to have discipline to spiritual exercise. Do you get that? You think I'm twisting that too much, or is that all right to say it? So bodily exercise is good. The Bible is actually really condoning and encouraging bodily exercise, but it's bringing it into perspective and saying that it's got to be not the thing that we live for, not the thing that masters our life. It's not to be driven by vanity or insecurity. It's not to become the thing that our identity is established upon, because then spiritual things are far more important in one sense, but this is still really vitally important and still something that we need to have discipline for. And in the same way as we have discipline for that, we actually can demonstrate discipline for spiritual fitness. Now I'm going to jump into, I think if you just bear with me 2 seconds, I'm just bouncing around on my phone into a few different verses, and I'm not as quick as some of you might be. How you going? Still awake? Cool. This gives you a chance to think, catch up with me. Yeah, here we go. It says, stay clear of silly stories that get dressed up as religion. This is the message. Exercise daily in God. No spiritual flabbiness, please. Workouts in the gymnasium are useful, but a disciplined life in God is more so, making you fit both today and forever. You can count on this. Take it to heart. Okay? And so, again, it's not dismissing it, but it's saying that it is a really good thing. Alrighty. There was another translation as well, but I couldn't spot which one that was. So that's the first one, exercise. The second one, and we could talk more about that, but I'm just really laying the foundation saying, you know what, it's a good thing, and it's important, isn't it, to have exercise. And someone else can tell you how to do it all and whatever else, but it is a good thing to do. The second one I've got here is diet and food. And again, such a big subject, but I just want to bounce off a question actually that I was asked this week, and then just elaborate on that a little bit, because actually there's another passage I had, but I haven't got it written in my notes. So, but it doesn't matter. It talks about again the importance of exercise, the importance of doing things, but then it talks about not being ruled by what we eat or what we do. All right, and so. Someone asked me about how come in the Bible, in the Old Testament, it talked about some foods that were not good food to eat. And a couple of those are things like pork and shellfish. And then they say, how come we eat those things today? And that's an excellent question. Again, I'm not going to go into it for too long. But what I understand is, you know, in Bible times, there were certain foods that weren't healthy in the way that they were prepared. And we could say the opposite, actually, that, you know, Jesus talked about foods that he ate, like bread and other things, that today aren't prepared in the same way either, so they're probably less healthy than what they were back in those times. But you know that the pork, pigs and shellfish are scavengers, and so what they would do is they would eat all the rubbish and eat all the stuff that wasn't healthy, and so that would get into their body. And even today, some of our guys, they go out chasing wild pigs, and when they get a wild pig, they find out that the wild pig's full of worms and whatever, and it would just be totally unhealthy for that to be eaten because of what the food that it's eating. In the industry, in the pork industry, and again, I'm no expert, but I kind of know this from my involvement in the past, and I'll have to be careful because Trish is over there. Trish, you'll be able to validate or otherwise just quietly tell me later that I was wrong, all right? But you know, I think it's actually, there are a lot of strict regulations about what you're able to feed the pigs. And so you're not supposed to collect up the scraps around the place and feed the pigs on those scraps. So I think I'm confident, Trish. How am I going? Is that all right? So there's strict regulations about grain and other things that you feed them because pork, you know, can be contaminated by what the pig eats. And so in the Bible times, it was like, don't eat pork because pork is something that would be unhealthy for you to eat. And so it became a very, you know, inappropriate food. When we were kids, we used to catch yabbies in the channels, and I'm guess sure I'm not the only one. But back then, there wasn't the same strict controls on what else got in the channel. And so I think when I was about 14, we used to catch a bucketful, you know, and I'd take them home, we'd cook them all up, and I'd just eat them till I was, you know, crazy. But I used to wake up sometimes in the middle of the night, I was dreaming about a bucketful of yabbies getting in my bed, and I can remember getting out of bed, walking over, turning the light on, and then being awake enough to realise how silly that was, because I'm checking my bed to see if I've got yabbies in my bed, because we'd pulled in so many yabbies, and we got them in the bucket, you know, and we're picking them up and playing with them. Anyone else? Please, someone else be like that. Oh, good. Okay, cool, good. Did you dream about them or not? Anyway, in your bed. Sometimes I used to come home in the mice plagues and there were literally mice in my bed and I'd flick them out from under my pillow and hop into bed. That was actually real. I didn't have to turn the light on for that. But anyway, but the yabbies. And so what happened was I got about 14. I started to get affected by eating shellfish. And, you know, and when I researched that and looked into it, what happens is they collect the toxins because they're scavengers and it would build up in your system and then you would usually or often you would develop an allergy later on in your life. So guess what? I can't eat prawns and don't feel sorry for me. Like, I like a good steak, all right? So don't worry about the prawns. But, you know, there was one time, I'm getting really sidetracked because there was one time that Sam and I went, it affects me and it's not like life-threatening, but it's very uncomfortable for a while. Throat sort of swells up and whatever. So I just came to terms with that and said, right, I can't eat them anymore. It's sort of built up so much. But one time we were invited up to Condoblin to a family that we'd got to know really well, and they invited us for a long time ahead of time, and we were going out to their property to have dinner, and they rang up ahead of time and said, is there anything you can't eat? No, we're right, we can eat anything at all. And so we turned up, and they're so delighted to have us finally come to their house for dinner, and they were serving up, and they came out with this beautiful prawn cocktail, like, and sat it on the table. Well, that's the only time, mostly I'll be honest and I'll tell people. One time I did by accident when I was in Adelaide. I was at a function and I ate a couple and actually it never affected me. And so, but this night I ate that prawn cocktail and thought, well, I'll just do whatever happens and it never affected me one bit. I thought, maybe I'm right. But then I had something with a tiny bit of prawn, like some Chinese, and it really went off. So I just believe that was a miracle that night that God allowed me to be gracious and loving towards this couple. Anyway, sidetrack, and I'll take it off the sermon, all right? Is that okay? Because you don't know how long I was going to go for anyway. All right. So anyway, diet and food. So there's reasons why. The whole idea is, like, food is not meant to be something lawful, but it's meant to be, isn't it? What is good for us? Is that right? And that's, I guess, what I was trying to get at with that big, long story, is that it's not about, well, you can do this and you can't do this and you should do this and you shouldn't do this. And I would say to people, you make up your own mind. And you know, there are people who choose not to eat all sorts of things. Sometimes it's because of medical reasons, like why I can't eat prawns. Other times it's by choice. And I totally respect that. And I just want to say that, you know, right now, that I totally respect that. That actually diet is something that we can choose and we can, it can be helpful. We can get advice from all sorts of places. But that's up to us. You know, not something that we judge each other about. Who agrees with that? And so it's because it's so difficult now, isn't it? There's so many different things and ideas and thoughts. Well, you know, if you read something and you think that's going to be good for me, that's going to be good for me, then I think by all means, but let's all aim for health. Let's not let it be a master to us. Let's not come under condemnation. Let's not make it rules and laws for others just because it's something we take on ourselves. Do you know what I mean? That's the thing. Let's be free in it. Is that right? And so be aware of it. Health is good. But let's you know, trust each other and support each other. And I'm not saying that for any reason. I'm just saying because I think it's so topical at the moment and so relevant for us to make sure that we understand that. So, you know, we don't make rules and laws for each other. Even in the Bible, you know, anything that we're instructed to do is always intended not to restrict our life, but to actually make our life more healthy and more enriched and more to be able to fulfill the purposes of God in our life. Okay, so that's diet and food. You know, we've got to be conscious of what masters us. And we can say this about alcohol, we can say this about food, we can say it about whatever. You know, I'm addicted to water. If I go 2 days without water, I get a headache. Anybody else? Yeah. So, you know, there are certain things our body needs and whatever, but there are certain things that become masters in our life, and we want to make sure that with God's help and by God's grace, you know, nothing becomes a master to us in terms of our diet and what we take into our body. You know, there's an old computer saying that many of you would have been familiar with decades ago, a couple of decades ago when computers first were coming in, but it was like garbage in, garbage out. Is that right? So the computer can't tell us, really, the computer can't run our life. It's whatever we do to set it up, and I've got no idea mostly. If it doesn't do what it's told, then I'm stuck. But if it does what it's told, I'm happy, you know. I don't know how it works. I don't know what goes on behind. But really, they're not human, and they're not as intelligent as you and me, even though they can do things that we can't do. It's what we put in them that gives them the capacity to put something out. Is that right? And when you put rubbish programs in there, or you put stuff in there that's got viruses on it, then it's going to affect the computer. So what we take in is really important. I'm nearly done, but the third one is rest and balance. Now, balance can sometimes be not a good word, because sometimes balance can be, well, I do everything in balance, and then it can be an excuse not to ever, you know, do this or do that or do whatever. But when it comes to rest, I think, and our life and the management of our time, I think balance is a really important thing. So again, back to the axe. Sharpen the axe. This is a good one, isn't it? Because, you know, we can be just chipping away and working away. I've got to get this done. I've got a time frame. You know, our priorities often reflect our values. And there are times when, yes, absolutely, there are things that we just have no choice about. But pretty well more than what we think we have choice about. There are things that we can prioritize if we really have to, isn't there? And so, again, not to make it a law, not to be a rule, but just to be free. But, you know, I just want to talk briefly on this area because, it's a big subject and you can think about it for yourself. But Jesus was walking along with his disciples in Mark 2:27. You can scribble it down if you want. Mark 2:27. And what happened was, it was a Sabbath day and his disciples plucked some grain. And so the keepers of the law, the guys that were watching to catch him doing wrong, the guys that were so driven by the law, said to Jesus, well, anyway, how come your disciples were working on the Sabbath? You know, they were plucking some grain on the Sabbath. And Jesus, ultimately, in explaining the situation, he said to them, Sabbath is for man, not man for the Sabbath. And I've always remembered that saying, and I think it's a really key one in terms of the management of our time and committing time to, the Sabbath. In most people's reckoning, is not a Sunday anyway, it's a Saturday. But, you know, the Sabbath is really about taking time out of our program, isn't it, to be able to devote some time to the Lord, but also for rest for ourselves. And so many people have made it a religious thing. You know, you've got to do this and you've got to do whatever. But, you know, actually what Jesus was saying was, it's never intended to be, you know, some great law that you'll be punished if you don't keep it. But actually the Sabbath is for you. If you don't take advantage of it, if you don't take it up, then you're the one who will suffer. If you just keep on going 7 days a week, if you just keep on doing what you're doing, if you just kind of, your routine is just every day the same, and you don't somewhere in that program, and ideally, you know, a seventh day and a one day and a 7 day week, you don't take some time out, and you know, it could be just to rest, you know, but it's obviously what it's designed for as well, is to not just rest the body, but to come and refresh the spirit, isn't it? So it's, you know, and I'm sure we don't do it exactly the way it's all meant to be done, but the whole idea, the concept is, it's not a law, it's not a rule, it's not tick the box, it's not a religious practice. It's that it's actually going to be good for you, spiritually, physically, emotionally, in every way. If you have some time where you regularly discipline yourself to take that time out, to set it aside, to be refreshed. And the best way to be refreshed is not just physically on its own, but to be refreshed spiritually. Is that right? And I was so delighted, I think I've shared this, but you know, when you're the pastor for a lot of years, you just think, well, you know, I just kind of plan to go to church on Sunday. I just lock it in. Like, no distractions really get in the way, except if it's a life-threatening thing. And so you're kind of just there. You just know that's where I'll be. And so you kind of lock it in. But the part of that that I kind of was glad to learn a bit differently about in the last 12 months when I was off was that sometimes I think, well, you know, just because I've got to be there, is that why I'm there? You know, do I drive up Twynham Street sometimes. I've shared this with a few people, but I drive up Twynham Street sometimes and there's a guy sitting out the front with his cup of coffee and his newspaper, and I think, oh, wouldn't it be nice to do that one Sunday morning, you know? And so when I had the 12 months off, I thought, you know, there were some Sundays where we're planning, I didn't have to do anything, and we're saying to Sam, what are we going to do? And we'd say, oh, let's just go to church. Why don't we go to church? We could do anything we want to do, and we just wanted to come. Now, sometimes it's because the kids look after the grandkids, you know, and so, but mostly it wasn't that. They would have freed us up to do whatever we wanted to do. And we just found ourselves pretty well every week. If we weren't preaching somewhere, or which I allowed myself to preach a couple of times that were locked in before him, but if we weren't visiting a church or doing something like that, we were just coming along here and we enjoyed it. And it was good for me because I realised, you know what, even if I wasn't the pastor, you know what I'd be doing? I'd be turning up. And so, and I would be enjoying it, and I'd be loving being with you, and I'd be loving sitting under the word, and I'd be loving doing the worship and whatever else, because that's just, I know it's good for me. And so we're refreshed physically, emotionally and spiritually, you know, when we take some time out. You know, that's designed for us to take some time out. And, you know, even the people who aren't a Christian, it's still good for them, isn't it? To say, well, you know, take some time out. Don't just keep working every day, day after day, day after day, because it takes its toll. And so rest and balance. You know, I had a grandfather, probably everybody did. I had a grandfather at one time who used to pick me up on a Saturday morning when I was about primary school age, a bit earlier. We lived in town in Leeton before my parents bought the farm. My grandfather would go out to my uncle's farm every Saturday. So he'd come with the Esky, he'd pick me up. I'd have my own Esky, my hat and all the works. I'd hop in the car. He had an old grey Rambler and we'd drive out to my uncle's farm. We'd work for the day. And, you know, and then what he always did, he never worked Sunday. Always took Sunday off. We'd be harvesting rice and going flat out, and he would just, the farm would stop on the Sunday. You know, my uncle and my grandfather, they'd take the day off and we'd go to church or whatever we were doing. And I'm not saying this is for everyone. I know, I totally respect any farmer who, you know, one thing I've always respected about Ed since I've known him over the years is, you know, that Ed was running a farm and all the pressures that come with the farm, but he was someone who was able to say, hey, I'm not judging anyone, I'm not putting it on my neighbours, but what I'm doing is I'm taking that time off and I'm going to come and, you know, be refreshed and, you know, and whatever. And isn't that a step of faith? Like the rain's coming, what are you going to do? Well, sometimes you make the decision or whatever. It's up to the farmer to do that. It's not up to us to judge. You know, and I'm not in any way wanting to judge any farmer, but I do admire and respect anyone, a business owner, a farmer, a family person, anyone who can say, you know what, I'm just going to lock that time in because I just need to, not because I have to, not to tick the box, not because Trevor told me to, not because, you know, the religious people told me to. But because I just know if I just take some time out and have time off my normal duties and I get refreshed spiritually and prioritise that and commit to that, what a beautiful thing, you know, what a healthy thing it's going to be for us. The last thing I want to mention is healing. 1 Peter 2:24 just says, by his stripes we were healed. The Amplified Bible puts it beautifully, but we won't read it because I want to finish in a couple of secs. But the cross talks about our salvation. Talks about being saved. It's the Greek word sozo, which means to be whole in our body and in every part of our being. Alrighty? Salvation in our spirit, but healing in our body. It's not something that's always easy to believe and teach because there's so many complexities with this as well, isn't there? You know, when we talk about healing, there's so many complexities. One time I preached a sermon and I just gave a few of the reasons why where sickness comes from, and this is a really quick overview of it, but it was like sickness or infirmity comes from a couple of reasons. One is our own lifestyle. And I'll give the example of Warnsey. Last time I talked about myself, but I'd like to pick on Warnsey today. If Warnsey says, I'm going to go up on Saturday to Mount Selwyn and I'm going to go skiing. It's about -1 degrees, but it's good because the snow's really fluffy and it's just, you know, a heap of snow up there. So he packs his bag and he puts in all his ski gear and he puts his Speedos in because he's going to go up to the snow and he's thinking, I'm going to take my Speedos. So he gets up to Mount Selwyn, he gets off the bus and he puts his speedos on, and he puts his skis on, and he has a great time all day. Now, please don't close your eyes and think about that for too long, because Warnsey wouldn't want you to do that. But if he comes home and he's got a cold, is it the devil's fault? Maybe. I don't know. But anyway, maybe the devil made him do it, you know. But, you know, there's things that we do that are just, you know, in our lifestyle, if we refuse to rest, refuse to exercise, refuse to eat right food. Again, not a judgmental statement, but we know that smoking can have a negative effect. Too much alcohol, drugs, whatever, we can go into it. Too much food, like we're not just picking on some people. But all these things, like if they're out of sync, then in some ways it's not like the devil and it's not God, it's just our lifestyle, isn't it, that's enabled us to, or caused us to be facing some health issues. Does that mean we can't come and ask for healing? Well, we've got to be able to listen to God, and he might direct us to take certain steps, but God's always interested in healing, and I believe we can always come and ask for healing. But sometimes it's not that simple. There's other factors involved. You agree? Are you with me? All right. The second thing is, sometimes it's just because we're in a fallen world. That sickness exists because it's a fallen world. Someone asked Jesus in John 9 and verse 10, he's walking with his disciples and they saw this blind man. And the disciples looked at the blind man and they said to Jesus, "Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Now the older translations make it sound a little bit awkward because they say, well, it was an opportunity for God to show his power or whatever. But really it's not meaning he made him sick so he could show his power. If you read it in some of the more modern ones, particularly The Message is a good one, what it talks about is it says that actually don't ask that question. It's not meant to be explained that way. That's really what it says. It's not meant to be explained that way. That actually it's just an opportunity now to put into practice. So don't ask who sinned, who did this, who did that, why is this man sick, why was he born that way? Well, that's not the way to approach it, Jesus says. Just pray for him. Just take the opportunity to invite God's healing power or to invite God to do what God does. Do you get me? And so we can look at situations. We can look at ourselves and say, well, you know, I've got this problem and I've had it a long time, or I was born with this or born with that. We know that over time, genetics have been, because of sin in the world, genetics have become less pure. Is that right? And so people say, well, what happened in those first couple of families, Adam and Eve, who married who? Well, the genetics were pure those times. They could marry within the family. But now it's against the law to marry your brother and sister, because what happens is the genetic defects that exist in our life are multiplied if you marry to someone too close to you in relationship. Do you get what I mean? And so really there's things that have happened that cause sickness to come. But it's not, have you sinned, that's why you're sick. But sickness is in the world because it's a fallen world. Sickness exists. Things like chemical balance and physical organs and different deformities and things like that, it's no one's fault. It's just because sin exists in the world. It's not the sinner's fault. You know what I mean? And so there's our own lifestyle, our fallen world. And the last one is demonic attack. Yes, we do have a spiritual enemy, and at times there is the need to not just pray about the physical need, but to understand that there's a spiritual thing going on behind it, and we need to bind the spiritual powers. And there's lots of examples of that. James talks about submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee. You know that when we come under God's word and trust his word, we have authority to tell the devil to get out of a situation. In Ephesians 1, Paul said, the same power that raised, this is what I pray, that you'll understand this and have revelation of this, the same power that raised Christ from the dead dwells in you. So you have authority to overcome spiritual powers. Is that right? So sharpen the axe, exercise, diet and food, rest and balance, healing, praying for healing, also seeking medical help, you know, when it's needed, is an important thing. To involve others in the process of healing is an important thing to be willing to do. Because healing isn't a simple science, it's not a simple process, it's not a simple methodology, it's not a simple predictable process. And that's why out of relationship with God, you get led by the Spirit to know how to pray for healing for yourself and for others. Everyone, I think, understands and accepts that. So in our study, we're encouraged to set a 3-month goal in each of these areas. And this one's not a difficult one, is it? So don't necessarily set a goal to climb Mount Everest by next Friday, but have a look and say, you know what, it's a good thing to think about my health. It's a good thing to think about my health, not because of my ego, not because of some obsession, not because it's my security or my identity, but actually because it's a good thing to do. And if you do the midweek study, you'll find, because you know what? This body's been entrusted to us. We're stewards of it. And we have a mission that we want to accomplish. We don't want to waste it, and we don't want to throw it away, and we don't want to end our days early, do we? We just want to be available. And we want to be able to run our race and do the years that God's given us to do. There are some things that are outside of our control, but one of the things we can control is to consider our physical health. I did find where I had a little piece of paper with that other version of 1 Timothy 4, so I'll just read that to you. It's in the Amplified. It says, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness. Brackets, keeping yourself spiritually fit. Discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness, keeping yourself spiritually fit. For physical training is of some value, but godliness, spiritual training, is of value in everything and in every way, since it holds promise for the present life and for the life to come. And that's in 1 Timothy 4, verse 7 through to about verse 9. You can keep reading, and the Amplified really puts it well. And so, spiritual health is what we looked at last time. Physical health, what's going to flow through is a real overlap, isn't it? Mental health, emotional health.